Is there hope for an Ebola vaccine?
A novel therapy for heart failure.
A new way for managing atrial fibrillation.
And how effective is the flu vaccine in pregnant women with HIV?
That's what we're talking about this week on PodMed, the weekly look at the medical headlines from Johns Hopkins, posted on September 5th, 2014. I'm Elizabeth Tracy.
And I'm Rick Lang, professor of medicine at Johns Hopkins and president of the Texas Tech University Health Science Center in El Paso and dean of the Paul L. Foster School of Medicine.
Rick, how about if we start this week with ZMapp, the potential vaccine for Ebola virus infection? That's in Nature. Of course, we've been watching this thing gallop. A couple weeks ago, Tom Frieden, the head of the CDC, went over there and said, I don't even think we've seen the tip of the iceberg yet with regard to infection. So we really desperately need some hope.
And in fact, it's estimated there'll be at least 20,000 cases of Ebola infection. And right now, this is the largest number of cases and fatalities ever recorded. For the listeners that may have missed the earlier podcasts that talked about this, remind them that it's a viral infection spread by exposure to bodily fluids. It has an incubation period of about 3 to 21 days. And initially, people only have flu-like symptoms, so it may go unrecognized until they develop the more severe symptoms. There's rapid progression to advanced disease characterized by hemorrhage, multiple organ failure, and a shock-like syndrome, with a mortality that approaches 75%. Now, you had highlighted this as a vaccine, but this is actually a different therapy. This is the use of antibodies, what's called a monoclonal, a single clone of antibodies, and actually two different clones directed against the Ebola virus. I'm highlighting this because this is the data that underscores the therapy that was applied to two Americans and subsequently given to other individuals. We don't very often report studies that were conducted in animals. This is reversion of advanced Ebola virus disease in non-human primates who were infected intentionally with the Ebola virus. And they were given doses of this monoclonal antibodies called ZMapp to see whether it could reverse the effects. Specifically, in monkeys that did not receive the ZMapp, the mortality was essentially 100%. And the monkeys who were retreated, they rescued 100% of them, even when treatment was initiated 5 days after they had been exposed to the virus.
Right. So that's, of course, good news, because since we don't know when somebody is in the incubation period and may not get them, especially in some areas where medical care isn't available to medical care until they're frankly manifesting symptoms, this is a good thing.
Yeah, it's very good.
My misspeaking, of course, about vaccine was a little confusion. I know that the NIH, of course, is starting a trial of a vaccine this week, as a matter of fact.
It is. Now, the nice thing about giving these antibodies doesn't depend upon someone developing an immune response. But longer term, we need to have a vaccine that's effective. As you mentioned, there are several different promising vaccines that are in the works.
Good news, hopefully. We're talking about infectious disease then. Let's turn to the New England Journal of Medicine, a look at the flu vaccine. And this time it really is a vaccine in women who are HIV positive and negative and when they're pregnant.
And pregnant women are a priority for influenza or flu vaccine because of their heightened susceptibility to developing severe flu during their second trimester, all the way to after they've shortly delivered. Part of that is because during the time of pregnancy, their body's undergoing what's called immunomodulation. The immune system is dampened down a bit so that the mother doesn't develop antibodies that could potentially harm the fetus. So the question is, in that immune modulated state, if you actually give a vaccine, is it effective? Now, in this particular case, the vaccine is not only helpful for the mothers, but also for the infants as well. Now let's take women that are also HIV infected and ask the same question, are vaccines, particularly flu vaccines, effective in this group? These were two double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled trials using a trivalent, three different antigens in the influenza vaccine, conducted in South Africa in pregnant women in a group that was not HIV infected and also in a group that was HIV infected. And what they discovered was in women that were not HIV infected, vaccines decreased the rate of influenza infection by about 50%. It went down from 3.6% in women that received only placebo versus 1.8% in those that were treated with a vaccine. And by the way, it decreased the rate of infection in the newborns as well. What about in women that had HIV infection? Either their risk or the risk of their children developing flu was about 17%. And those that received the vaccine, it decreased it to 7%.
I'm assuming that these women who are HIV positive were also on the whole antiretroviral regimen.
Absolutely. And what that tells us is that the flu rate in these individuals, despite getting good HIV therapy, is still markedly increased. The flu vaccine was effective in preventing them from getting the disease and their children as well.
And this sounds to me like a public health message. You and I have beaten on this drum about a bazillion times regarding pregnant women and getting a flu vaccine yearly. So this is yet one more reason to do it, as far as I can tell.
Also getting the vaccine during the first trimester of their pregnancy as well.
Okay. Since we're in the New England Journal of Medicine, let's take a look at a new strategy for heart failure.
This is exciting news, not only because I'm a cardiologist, but we haven't had a new therapy for heart failure in a decade. So this is a new class of medications called neprilysin inhibitors. We know that when people develop heart failure, their body undergoes changes, what we call neurohormonal activation. The neural system and their hormonal system is activated, and that neurohormonal system actually feeds to make the heart failure worse, and it increases mortality. And we know that agents that affect the neurohormonal system are very effective in reducing mortality. Neprilysin is a newly identified neuropeptidase. The more neprilysin there is, the better outcome there is. It seems to cause dilation of the blood vessels. So if we can inhibit its degradation, there'll be more around. That's what this new agent, goes by the initials LCZ696, did in over 8,000 patients that had mild to moderate heart failure and depressed ejection fraction. Patients were randomized to either receive standard therapy with enalapril or this new combination that had an angiotensin receptor blocker and the neprilysin inhibitor. And those that received the newer medication had a 20% reduction in the composite of death and heart failure. It reduced death by about 20%. It reduced hospitalization for heart failure by about 21%. So in an era that hasn't seen a new therapy in over a decade, this is very exciting news.
Particularly as we're projecting that the rate of people developing heart failure is going to increase markedly.
We've done a much better job of keeping people alive after they've had their heart attack, but that means there are more people that have heart failure with depressed heart function later on. And importantly, the medicine was very well tolerated.
Great news. Since we're talking about the heart then, let's turn to that other thing that we are absolutely planning on many more people manifesting in the short term and the long term, atrial fibrillation. In The Lancet, a look at the use of a beta blocker in that condition.
Beta blockers are indicated in people that have heart failure. It's proven therapy. It's class one recommendation, both in the United States and in Europe. Now, many people with heart failure also have atrial fibrillation, an irregular heart rhythm. And it's the practice of many cardiologists or many primary care physicians to recommend beta blockers in these individuals because it slows down the heart rate for atrial fibrillation. And you would also assume that it would also improve survival as it does in standard heart failure therapy patients. This study happened to address that. It did a meta-analysis of 10 different trials of heart failure patients, over 18,000 patients. About three-fourths of them had a regular rhythm, and about a fourth had atrial fibrillation. And all these patients were randomized to routine therapy with or without a beta blocker. And those that had heart failure and atrial fibrillation, there was no mortality benefit at all. So on the basis of this, the authors of the study say that beta blockers can be used to slow the heart rate, but they shouldn't be used preferentially over other medications with the thought that they could improve survival in patients with atrial fibrillation, heart failure, and reduced ejection fraction, because the data don't seem to support that.
Clearly good news for these folks who are normally sufferers of polypharmacy. So if there's some way to reduce the number of medications they need to take, I think that's a great thing. But what are we going to do about their AFib?
What I'd say is there are many different types of medications one can use to slow the heart rate when someone has atrial fibrillation and a fast heart rate.
Okay, well, based on then your reading of this study, what are you going to do when you have a patient who looks like that?
This is a particular time where you weigh the benefits versus the side effects for particular individuals. And there are some that are more likely to have side effects, for example, older individuals, particular races that may have more side effects from one medication than another. So I think this opens our options.
But for right now, you're going to say you're going to tailor therapy to the individual. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. On that note then, I will reveal that I am going to talk about the ZMAP for Ebola virus infection in Nature this week. That's a look at this week's medical headlines from Johns Hopkins. I'm Elizabeth Tracy.
And I'm Rick Lang. Y'all live well.